Good evening, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Hope you get to stick around for a while. For those of you who are subscribers, podcast subscribers, I have been informed by the elves and fairies who run MikeMalloy.com that the new Malloy Uncensored Mailbag video is up. So if you are a subscriber, go check it out. It's pretty brutal, but all kinds of bad words, but that's how right-wingers like to write to me. So it's out. If you folks would like to see it, go to MikeMalloy.com and just look for the members section and the video that's up there. Got anything else new up there? That's it right now? Okay. Tonight, of course, is the beginning of Passover. The Jewish holiday, when God passed over the enslaved Israelites and slaughtered the firstborn in each household that was not marked in Egypt with the blood of a lamb. But there a little something special today. At dawn today, there was also a the holiday, the blessing of the sun. Jews around the world celebrate the blessing of the sun. It's an event that happens once every 28 years. And according to Jewish tradition, when it rose today, the sun was in the same spot in the sky as it was when the world was created, according to Genesis. Now, this event occurs during the spring equinox, which, as you know, occurs every 365 days, but once every 28 years, it occurs at dawn Wednesday, which is the fourth day of creation based on Jewish beliefs. And on this day, when Jews recite the blessing, or this is the day that they recite the blessing of the sun, and according to Jewish beliefs, God created the sun, the moon, and the stars as the fourth day began. Executive director of the Orthodox movement, Shabbat Lubavitch, in Florida, said the celebration is so rare and so unique. To know that millions of people observe this holiday is extremely inspiring and exciting. And it's also, we're getting very close to the Christian holiday of Easter. All of this around the spring equinox, which I find fascinating, always have. But Passover, or Pesach, I believe that's the Hebrew or the Yiddish, Pesach, is the festival, of course, commemorating God sparing the Hebrews when he killed the firstborn of Egypt. And it is the seven-day feast of the unleavened bread, commemorating the exodus from Egypt and the liberation of the Israelites. And, of course, the Seder, Kathy and I have attended many Seders, everyone we've gone to has always been a lot of fun. A lot of questions, answers, unusual practices, like the recital of the Kiddush. It is the purpose of the Seder, sort of, or perhaps entirely, is to arouse the interest and curiosity of the kids at the table. And the kids are rewarded with nuts and candies when they ask questions and participate in what happened next. And the kids are also encouraged to search for the piece of matzah which is the last thing eaten at the Seder, the kid or the group of kids who discover the hiding place are rewarded with a prize. And this is also, is this not the meal, Kathy, where the door is left open? So that, Joshua? No,
All I remember is Eliyahu.
Eliyahu? Okay. I like to mention these holidays, all of them, whether they're Christian, Jewish, or Muslim, because I honestly believe that they come from ancient pagan traditions that precede the religions, the people of the book, by millennia. But that's just my opinion.
I'm guessing that's Elijah.
Elijah, thank
Maybe.
You.
Maybe.
I think
Don't ask me.
I think you're right. I think it is Elijah.
I'm going to an atheist convention this weekend. So
yeah.
What do I know?
I know. I'm speaking at the convention. So yeah. I mean, it's one thing to be an out and proud atheist. It's something else again, though, to when you separate the insanity of religion from some of the nicer traditions, some of the, I hate to use the word quaint, traditions, but some of the fun traditions, and I think you can find them in all religions, especially Hinduism. My God, don't they have a celebration about every other day? They honor some different god. But the celebrations themselves are a lot of fun. They really are, to me. Maybe because I have this cold-ass objective view, or maybe because I just like to participate in these kinds of celebrations. But anyway, to the Jewish listeners to this program, and there are many, A, happy Passover. B, have a great Seder, and I know you're not listening tonight, all right? But you'll hear it on the podcast. So, from Prairie 2, who sent in his missive tonight, Prairie 2 being our economics correspondent, Bruce Enberg, who writes in, the subject line, what's your favorite steak sauce? Wear your goggles. And don't forget, you can go to his website, prairie2.com, prairie2.com, and, comment, challenge him, talk to him, send him an email, or not email, but leave comments, whatever. But here's what Prairie 2 submits tonight. Insurance companies are in line today jostling to get bank bailout money from the government. Most insurance companies don't own a bank. That didn't own a bank, I should say, ran out and bought a small bank or savings and loan in order to qualify. The insurance companies did that. If you can afford to buy a bank out of petty cash, do you really need taxpayer money? Of course, these companies are in real trouble since they are part of the new American century and don't do anything but push paper around. In the old days, pre-Ronald Reagan, companies that pushed paper around were a small accessory to the real economy. Then the Republicans and conservative Democrats decided that we didn't need a real economy, but could just push paper around. After all, pushing paper around creates jobs to replace the ones that have gone to China. Jobs that are now being sent to India and the Philippines just as fast as the insurance companies could do it. It takes money to establish overseas operations, so they need a government bailout to pay for it. Capitalism has stopped meaning shared risk to establish a useful business. It is really just a legitimizing of Ponzi schemes, predatory lending, government corruption, and an assortment of deceptive, if not outright strong-arm tactics to extract money from a hapless public. Any useful business is prey to be brought down by a so-called capitalist. The too-big-to-fail predators are running out of prey and are turning to the government to keep them in fresh meat. But this can't last. Do you feel like you're swimming in steak sauce? From Prairie 2. Go to his website, prairie2.com, and chat on. All right, stick around. The program is just beginning. If you have finished your Seder dinner and have joined us, Mazel Tov. We'll be right back.
with a joyless heart. Then sometimes again it seems all I have is words. Then you finally see me in my mother's eyes.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
About 21 past the hour, as you know, there was an act of piracy on the high seas against a U.S.-flagged merchant vessel today. In, I believe, the Indian Ocean off the coast of Somalia. Big mistake on the part of the pirates. But it didn't take the Navy to, the U.S. Navy, to come to the rescue, although they were on the way. I blogged about this today at MikeMalloy.com because I just, you know, have very little use for pirates or hijackers of any stripe. You know, when you have people out there just doing their job, whether they're on an airliner or a commercial vessel or a pleasure craft or whatever, and, you know, evil, snaky sons of bitches like this come over the side with the Kalashnikovs, you know, no. I believe in sort of the law of the seas, the high seas, you know, no mercy to these people. Over the side. What? Sharks? What? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. Anyway, do you remember Empty Wheel blogging today at Fire Dog Lake blog site? Empty Wheel writes, remember how a Union flight crew, Union ferry crews, Union first responders pulled off the incredible rescue back in January? What Empty Wheel is referring to is the U.S. Airways jet that landed in the Hudson River and the subsequent rescue of all 155 people. What was not brought out, and maybe it's not all that pertinent to that story, was the fact that almost everyone involved, whether it was the flight crew, the cabin crew, the ferry crews, the first responders, almost every single one of those people is and was a union member. You remember unions, don't you? Well, those darn unions are at it again. And this time, it's in vanquishing pirates. Now, according to news reports, American crew members aboard that ship have regained control of the vessel, hijacked by the pirates off the coast of Somalia. Defense Department officials confirmed that one pirate is in custody. U.S. officials said the status of the other pirates, plural, is unknown, but they were reported to, quote, be in the water, end quote. Whoops! What? Did you slip? The CEO of the company owns the vessel told reporters, quote, all the crew members are trained in security detail in how to deal with piracy. As merchant vessels, we do not carry arms, but we have ways to push back. But we do not carry arms. Now, at least 12 of the Americans aboard the Maersk Alabama, which was the ship, are members of the Seafarers International Union, the SIU. As far as the SIU, a ship sailing under U.S. flags have these union crews, Seafarers International Union. And as Mother Jones has confirmed, I believe it's Mother Jones, it appears that union membership is a big part of the reason these men were able to retake their ship. And where did members of the crew of the Alabama receive anti-piracy training? 3, 2, 1. That's right, from their union, from the Seafarers International Union. And as Empty Wheel writes, if this serial heroism keeps up, businesses are going to be clamoring for unions to keep their operations safe. Amen and amen. Man. Union members as heroes. Gee, what a concept. There's this also in the news today, screaming for a little attention on the Malloy program, an organization of Christian physicians argued today against an impending rollback of a federal rule allowing healthcare workers to refuse to provide certain reproductive services, saying it's discriminatory. Okay? Now, the impending rollback of a federal rule that was put in effect under the Bush crime family's control of the country said that, you know, certain healthcare workers, even up to and including pharmacists, if they didn't want to fill a prescription written by a doctor for birth control or the morning after pills, they didn't have to on the basis of their conscience or their religious beliefs. Oh, my God. And someone who is confronted in a hospital, a physician, confronted with an emergency situation that requires the termination of the pregnancy, can refuse, no matter whose life is at stake here, can refuse to grant the person needing that, which obviously would be a woman, can refuse to grant her the emergency services necessary. Well, now there's talk that the Obama administration is going to say, look, we're getting rid of the rule. So a group of Christian physicians who apparently are not aware of the Hippocratic Oath, which somewhere in the beginning says, first, do no harm. But Christian physicians, is that what we're down to now? Christian physicians who refuse to treat patients? I mean, it's getting crazy, isn't it?
Up America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Now this healthcare rule that was enacted. The rule went into effect just last August. Well, it was proposed last August, and it was enacted on January 20th, the very day that Barack Obama took office as president. It comes from the Bush crime family. And it is a rule that allows healthcare workers to refuse to provide certain reproductive services. What this rule did, it expanded on a 30-year-old law establishing what's called a conscience clause for health professionals who don't want to perform abortions. Okay. But under the rule, workers in healthcare settings, from doctors to all the way to staff personnel, can refuse to provide services, information, or advice to patients on subjects like contraception, family planning, blood transfusions, even vaccine counseling, if they are morally against it. How can you be morally against contraception? I mean, oh my God, if you don't want to perform an abortion, fine. No one is forcing anyone to do that. But contraception, family planning, blood transfusions, vaccine counseling. A guy named David Stevens, who's head of this 15,000-member Christian Medical Association, said at a news conference, quote, "The right of conscience is under attack," which it isn't, "and that is dangerous for our country, our healthcare system, and our patients." Every single right-winger lies. Every single Republican lies. There is nothing that would force a physician or a medical services provider to perform or even assist in an abortion if it is against his or her moral stance. Nothing. What they are talking about is other reproductive services or blood transfusions or vaccine counseling. But every one of these sons of bitches, every issue, I don't care what the issue is, they lie. All of them lie. Now, healthcare organizations like the American Medical Association, their official position is that healthcare providers have an obligation to their patients to advise them of the options in spite of what may be their own personal beliefs. And why is that? Well, a member of the American Nurses Association said, quote, "We don't make God-like decisions. That's not what it's about for us. It's about helping the patient make his or her own decision. No one appointed us to be the ultimate person to pass judgment," end quote. Isn't that the truth? And doesn't it say somewhere in the Christian Bible, "Judge not that you be not judged"? The hypocrisy of these people, whoever these people are, in this case, it is members of this Christian Medical Association. What the hell is the Christian Med? I mean, religion truly just breaks us into a million pieces, doesn't it? Huh? It takes everything about the fabric of a society and destroys it, just shreds it. I watched some crazy woman on Hardball today. They had a substitute host. What's his guy? Mike Barnacle was substituting. And this woman, Gallagher, I forget her first name, but her argument against same-sex marriage was, I've never heard such stuff. And on the other side of the issue was, I'm assuming he was a gay man. Gay folk don't wear signs around their neck that says, "Hi, I'm queer." But he was with the human rights, predominantly gay organization in this country. Never mind. Don't email me. He was speaking in favor of same-sex marriages. Maggie, that's her first name, Gallagher, was speaking against it. And that same tired, disgusting line about, well, it's an attack on marriage. God damn, no, it isn't. Divorce lawyers are an attack on marriage, Miss Gallagher. Open your eyes and smell the coffee. And she could do that, trust me. But, you know, this, I'm so sick of it. Why do these people, the conservatives, they have to pepper their points of view, build their points of view around illogic, stupidity, and lies? I mean, if you want to say my church will not sanction gay marriages, okay, that's fine. If you want to delude yourself by joining a church or believing in some religious fantasy, go ahead. But what gives you the right to impose that on people who don't follow your belief? This is the arrogance and the fascism of religion. There it is. You know, for the umpteenth time, I know you're getting sick of this issue. I just can't help it. I cannot help myself. I'm this is like crack to me. This issue of these religious fundamentalists trying to prevent people from just being themselves. It drives me crazy. But over and over again, I've said it. Anybody with the sense God gave a sack of doorknobs, you'll pardon the God reference, should understand this. The state sanctions marriage. How can a civil organization like the state say, you people can get married, you people can't? Now, it's been done, but the last time it was done effectively was where it concerned people of different races. They even had a term for it. Oh, my God, miscegenation. Ah! That sounds like some kind of a blood disease, doesn't it? Miscegenation. What? Oh, my God, what is that? Well, that's when black person, white person get married. Oh, is that all it is? Miscegenation. Ah! It's an awful word. But every time these right-wing goofballs, these Christian freaks get out there with this thing about, well, it will destroy traditional marriage. What is traditional marriage? I mean, like I said the other night, marriage is marriage. It is a contract entered into by two people who are old enough to enter into contracts. You can't enter into a contract when you're 14, whether it is a contract to open up a gas station or a contract to get married. You can't do it. You're not of legal age. Oh, geez, never mind. It's pointless. Moving right along. This is from Bob in Miami, who writes regarding Passover, the extra cup of wine is for Elijah, and the door is left open for anyone who is hungry. And then he adds later in the Exodus, when Moses was on the mountain getting the 411 from Jehovah, the character played by Edward G. Robinson in the movie, who talked the Jews into making a golden calf to worship, was actually Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. He confessed to it under enhanced interrogation. Oh, really? Okay, Bob. Well, I got a very interesting email here from Kay in San Francisco, his high school history teacher. I don't want to share it with you, but I guess we'll do it next hour. Regarding Glenn Beck, who is trying to foment murder and is doing a goddamn good job of it in this country. He really is. Beck is pushing people who are borderline crazy to begin with into picking up weapons and firing and executing people. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Glenn Beck should be removed from anywhere near a microphone because he violates the First Amendment. He shreds it. He's a fascist son of a bitch who would love to see other people kill each other. But an email from Andre says, why isn't the FBI investigating people like Beck? They're terrorists. According to the Bush Doctrine, inciting terrorism or violence defines you as a terrorist. That's Beck. So where's the Justice Department? Come on, Eric Holder. You've got a whole list of people out there who are doing everything they can to incite absolute violence in this country. Oh, well. I guess Eric Holder is trying to decide whether or not to challenge his boss about continuing illegal wiretapping. Huh? We'll get to that tonight, too. Boy, is that getting harder and harder and harder to deal with, isn't it? Oh, and several members of the Congressional Black Caucus, I think three, Bobby Rush, Barbara Lee, and Emmanuel Cleaver, went to Cuba, first U.S. officials to meet with Fidel Castro since his surgery in July 2006. I also met with Raul Castro. No, I guess there were six members who went to this thing. We'll talk about that tonight, too. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
The worst disease, you can't love who you want to love in times like these. The siren of the ambulance, the deadpan of the cops, short to mark the outline where the boy first drops. Beware the Holy Trinity, church and state and law. For every death the virus gets more deadly than before. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these. Homophobia, the worst disease. You can't love who you want to love in times like these.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. All right, so we have U.S. officials flying to Cuba. It's amazing. I mean, how easy is this? We also have the U.S. is going to hold a joint or going to hold direct talks with or the U.S. will join direct talks between the U.N. and European powers and Iran over Tehran's nuclear program. So we're going to sit down and talk with the Iranians, apparently, and which is a good idea since we have an American citizen under arrest in that country now, charged with spying, and apparently she's a journalist for NPR. I would just say to the people holding her in Iran, think about the pirates off the coast of Somalia. Come on. Anyway, Castro has met, both Castros have met with Congressional Black Caucus members, and Fidel asked them, how can we help President Obama? Really? What happened is that six members of the Congressional Black Caucus went to Cuba. Barbara Lee, Bobby Rush, Emmanuel Cleaver, Melvin Watt, Marsha Fudge, and Michael Honda, and Laura Richardson. Greg Adams of the U.S. Interest Section in Havana. Don't you love diplomacy? We don't have diplomatic relations, but we have a U.S. Interest Section in Havana. Confirmed that these three members of the Congressional Black Caucus met with Castro, and that all six members met with Raul Castro yesterday, Monday, for more than 4 hours. Barbara Lee said, quote, I'm convinced Raul Castro wants a normal relationship with the United States. He's serious. She went on to, Bobby Rush said, I think that what really surprised me, but also endeared me to him, was his keen sense of humor, his sense of history, and his basic human qualities. I intend to do everything that I can when we get back to the States to make sure that normalization with our relationship with Cuba is given proper consideration both within the House of Representatives and the neighborhoods of America. I mean, what does it take to stop the insanity against Cuba? I mean, what does it take? I've said before, I was in high school during the Cuban Revolution, and I remember my high school history teacher was just more or less beside himself with I don't want to say joy, but with excitement over the fact that the Fulgencio Batista dictatorial regime in Cuba was being overthrown by, at the time, Castro said that he and his revolutionaries were agrarian reformers. They didn't dare use the word socialist or communist because, you know, the huge neighbor, Norte Americanos, would just start peeing their pants. Don't forget, this was back in 59? Cuban Revolution? Commies? Oh, my God. You know, we were used to at the time of just sending in the Marines or whoever to stop any kind of reformist revolution in Central America, in some places in South America, certainly the island nations. We didn't have any problem with that. What? You want freedom? Ah, here. Have a battalion of Marines instead. We'll show you freedom. So when Castro then came to address the United Nations, he went to Washington, D.C. after he assumed power and informed anyone who had listened that agrarian reformer, maybe, but what I really am is a communist. Oh, my God. Well, the United States immediately went ballistic on the guy, Eisenhower, and then, then of course, Kennedy, and all the way down the line. Every single president, Democrat and Republican, has acted like complete morons where it concerns Castro and Cuba. The infamous Bay of Pigs invasion that was set up by Eisenhower and carried out, it's my understanding, it was carried out by the CIA without the full knowledge of John Kennedy, which is one of the reasons he went nuts once he found out, once it wound up on the beaches of Cuba. And then, of course, the so-called Cuban Missile Crisis, that never had to have happened, but did, where, according to the mythologists, we were all just one finger stroke away from total thermonuclear exchange with the Soviet Union. you know, you can believe as much of that as you want to. Now, add into that mixture Operation Northwoods that was being talked about by the Joint Chiefs of Staff at the time and approved by all of them, up to including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, this crazed right-wing bastard. Who was it? Lemnitzer? Was it Lyman Lemnitzer? It was one of those right-wing freaks. That the plan was to, you know, blow up buildings, fly planes into buildings, fly planes into the Pentagon, crash jetliners, and blame it on Cuba. Gee, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? And blame it all on Cuba, which would result in, you know, the U.S. having to respond with a massive full-scale invasion of Cuba. You know, no more blowing up a U.S. ship in the Havana Harbor, which is what we did to start the Spanish-American War, because we really wanted Cuba, and we really wanted the Philippines, and we really wanted, yeah, it was the beginning of American empire. So the blowing up of the ship in the Cuban harbor in 1898, was 1898, which was, you know, it was an act of American sabotage. I think history has certainly cleared that up. But this time, no. This time, it was Russian missiles. And the only reason, of course, that Cuba turned to Russia was because of the total isolation that the U.S. imposed on this little island nation. So here we are. 50 years later. Half a century has gone by. Oh, my God. And finally, some U.S. members of Congress are down talking to Fidel and Raul and saying, hey, look, can't we just all get along? I mean, yeah, what a radical idea, huh? Welcome back. 6 and a half past the hour. This is the Molloy program. You stuck around for another hour, huh? Okay. Hey, don't forget, you steady listeners and you not so steady listeners. I know it's sometimes difficult to be steady in these times, but it is time to subscribe to the Molloy podcast. It is 25 cents a program is what it works out to, 25 cents a day. So, we are really counting on you to do that. There are all sorts of things that could be offered with the subscription. Right now, podcasts and Molloy's Uncensored Mailbag, and there are some other features we're going to add. So if you're thinking about doing this, becoming a subscriber, now's the time. Go to the website, MikeMolloy.com, and the information's there. It's not a donation. It is something we want to sell you, and that is podcasts of the program and access to other features that we're going to have there for subscribers. So what happens if you don't buy a subscription? Nobody buys a subscription to Playboy magazine. That's right. It goes out of business. And we don't want that to happen, do we? Not Playboy. Jesus. Ron in Briarwood, New York writes, Mike, when President Obama was traveling in Europe, the Czech Republic, Turkey, and Iraq, I was not concerned for his safety as much as I am when he appears in public right here in the good old U.S. of A. The steady drumbeats of sedition by the right-wing rushbots, the insane evangelists, the my cold dead hands NRA lunatics, are now joined by the Catholic Church. What a disgrace it is that the most dangerous place Obama will speak in the near future will be Notre Dame University. The president of that university says he will not back down on his invitation to the president to speak and be honored, and the student body, for the most part, will be respectful. But please, Mr. President, wear a Kevlar vest. Ron Briarwood, New York. Yeah, I I've been reading a little bit about that, too. He's going to do what? The commencement exercise at Notre Dame. And the anti-abortion crazy people who like to murder fully formed adults who advocate a woman's right to privacy where it concerns such a personal choice, or the actual physicians and attendant necessary medical personnel who assist if the woman does make a decision that is hers, her partner, hopefully, and her physicians, and along with her concept of what is proper or improper action. That is nobody's goddamn business, certainly not these right-wing religious lunatics. So, yeah, I share your concern, Ron. I hope he wears more than a Kevlar vest. Who's this from? Genetic Liberal, who writes, under the subject line, the scent of betrayal. Seven questions. One, why, Mr. President, are most of your advisors corporatists? Most of these advisors help create our economic mess. Two, why, Mr. President, are you not pushing harder for the Employee Free Choice Act? Three, why, Mr. President, are you not advocating harder to change free trade into fair trade? Four, why, Mr. President, are you escalating the war in Afghanistan? Five, why, Mr. President, are you not prosecuting the Bush crime family? Six, why, Mr. President, are you not helping Governor Siegelman? Seven, why, Mr. President, are you disrespecting the Constitution by supporting the Bush-FISA compromises? Good questions, Genetic Liberal. I hope somebody in the Obama administration starts providing answers. That would be nice, wouldn't it? All right, I want to... I've got time here. I want to share. This is from Kay in San Francisco, who is a history teacher out there. she writes, Mike, we're getting ready to start. I think one of the reasons Kay writes to me is because, you know, the subject matter she teaches, loosely under the heading American History and Government, I questioned several times. And I met Kay when I was in San Francisco last time. I've questioned her several times. How can you teach what you teach, knowing that everything has been destroyed over the past 8 years? And apparently some of the destruction is continuing and being solidified by the Obama administration. How can you do this? Well, she's answered me a couple of times, and this I find kind of interesting. She writes, hey, Mike, we're getting ready to start spring break. So I spent today showing excerpts from movies to my world and U.S. history classes. I learned early on that it's pointless to try to do serious work the last day before vacation. Two things really struck me, especially after listening to your program last night. In U.S. history, we are covering the Cold War. To illustrate the contrast between life in the United States and the Soviet Union, I showed the beginning of the film Moscow on the Hudson. It's a comedy from the mid-80s, and it does a great job of showing daily life in Russia. For example, standing in line for nearly everything and buying things like gasoline on the black market. More importantly, the film illustrates how Soviet citizens lived in fear of the KGB. In one scene, Vladimir, Robin Williams, is talking with his grandfather, who has nothing positive to say about the Soviet government. The entire family gets anxious because Grandpa is calling Kremlin leaders bastards and mocking them. In another scene, a group of protesters is herded into a black sedan and driven away. I always pause during these scenes to ask the kids to think about what they've seen. They always respond with questions like, the KGB wasn't in the apartment, so how did they know what Grandpa said? Where did they take the people in that black sedan? I use this opportunity to explain that the reason the KGB knew all about Grandpa was because Soviet government routinely spied on its citizens. I explain that in the USSR, freedom of speech and assembly were not constitutionally protected rights. I then contrast this with the rights guaranteed to Americans. The kids are always outraged that the Soviets invaded the privacy of citizens and shut people who disagreed with them up by throwing them in prison or a mental institution. The last time I didn't feel like a fraud while teaching this lesson was before the Bush crime family's warrantless wiretapping program came to light. After the Obama administration's announcement yesterday that they will not pursue legal action against the sons of bitches who are responsible, I honestly don't know if I can continue to approach this lesson as an exercise in contrasts. The similarities have become too glaring. In world history, or in world history, that was in U.S. history. In world history, I showed parts of the film Europa, Europa, which is based on the real-life experience of Solomon Perel, a young Jewish boy who, through a cruel twist of fate, ends up in the Hitler Youth. In one of the last scenes, Solly, the boy, refuses to fire his weapon at the approaching Soviet army. His commander yells at him, "What in the hell are you doing? Shoot, for God's sake! Do you want to be captured by the Soviets? The Russians shoot their prisoners on the spot. We must hold out so we can be captured by the Americans." What a difference between America's reputation then and now. Back then, we were seen as the good guys. We had the reputation of treating prisoners humanely, without the use of torture. The Nazis in Solly's unit had respect for the Americans, who were their enemy. Contrast this with the filth that comes out of the mouths of pigs like Rush Limbaugh about waterboarding being just fine. And, well, I honestly don't know where I live anymore. Between the Bush administration's crimes of spying on U.S. citizens without a warrant and their sanctioning of torture, I don't recognize my own country anymore. Kay in San Francisco. Yeah, and you know what's difficult about this, I'll add a postscript to Kay's email, is the fact that, and it is a fact, and I mean, rope-a-dope is one thing where it concerns Barack Obama letting the right-wingers flail and beat their heads against the wall and then very deliberately and purposefully ending some of the egregious activity of the Bush crime family. But what is beginning to really eat into me is the fact that the Obama administration is continuing some of the policies that can only be translated as totalitarian. Not authoritarian. That's the Catholic Church. Totalitarian. That is Soviet Union or Chinese or German fascism. So, I'm not sure where I live anymore either. And I don't like that feeling. You know what I'm saying? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their fathers have did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by.
Up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. The bad news is John Byrne, writing at rawstory.com, talks about it. Yesterday, in a stunning defense of George W. Bush's warrantless wiretapping program, President Barack Obama has broadened the government's legal argument for immunizing his administration and government agencies from lawsuits surrounding the National Security Agency's eavesdropping efforts. In fact, Byrne writes, a close read of the government filing last Friday reveals that the Obama administration has gone beyond any previous legal claims put forth by former President Bush. Responding to a lawsuit filed by a civil liberties group, the Justice Department argued that the government was protected by sovereign immunity from lawsuits because of a little notice clause in the USA Patriot Act. For the first time, the Obama administration's brief contends that government agencies cannot be sued for wiretapping American citizens even if there was intentional violation of U.S. law. They maintain that the government can only be sued if the wiretaps involve willful disclosure. Now, willful disclosure refers to the willful disclosure of intelligence information by government agents as described by section this and section that. And such disclosures by the government are the only actions that create liability against the United States. That's according to Obama Assistant Attorney General Michael Hertz. So what that means, of course, Truth Seekers, is the only way you can or someone could sue the government for wiretapping our phone calls and email is if they say, hey, listen, we tapped your phones and your email. Senior staff attorney Kevin Bankston of the Electronic Frontier Foundation, which is suing the government over the warrantless wiretapping program, notes that the government has previously argued that the government has sovereign immunity against civil action under the FISA statute. But he says that this is the first time that they've invoked changes to the Patriot Act, claiming the U.S. government is immune from claims of illegal spying under any other federal surveillance statute. Salon columnist and constitutional scholar Glenn Greenwald, who is generally supportive of progressive interpretations of the law, says the Obama administration has, quote, invented a brand new claim of immunity from spying litigation. Glenn Greenwald wrote Monday, quote, in other words, beyond even the outrageously broad state secrets privilege invented by the Bush administration and now embraced fully by the Obama administration, the Obama Department of Justice has now invented a brand new claim of government immunity, one which literally asserts that the U.S. government is free to intercept all of your communications, your calls, your emails, and the like. And even if what they're doing is blatantly illegal, and they know it's illegal, you are barred from suing them unless they, quote, willfully disclose, end quote, to the public what they have learned. Okay. Now, this will probably, what I just shared with you, will probably bring an avalanche of emails that say, we told you, Malloy, we told you, you dumbass liberal talk show host, we told you. You told me what? What did you tell me? That Barack Obama was not really a progressive, that he was really a fascist in progressive clothing? Is that what you told me? No, that's not what you told me. What you told me was he was a corporatist. He was a corporate candidate. And I told right back at you that I had no doubt about that, that it was a choice between two corporate candidates. Dennis Kucinich and Ralph Nader had as much chance of becoming president as I did. So we had Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And the Democrats decided on Barack Obama. The Republicans decided on a basket case and a hoe from Wasilla, Alaska. I could have not voted. You're right. But I chose to go ahead and vote for Barack Obama on the theory put forward by a lot of progressives that once in office, Barack Obama could be prevailed upon to clean up his act, although we didn't know what his act was going to be at the time. Am I starting to second guess this presidency? Around these issues, yes. There's a couple of issues. The so-called bailout of the financial services industry, I think has gone far enough. I think those sons of bitches should be allowed to sink. If it causes a collapse of capitalism, hip, 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 hooray. And then the other issue, of course, is this extension of government power that Barack Obama's administration seems to be embracing like a long lost lover or something. This is the part that really worries me. So, you know, I'm sure everyone's tired of saying it, but the man has been in office for 80 days, 70 days, whatever it's been. He's got a lot on his plate. How sick of that are you hearing that? Are you becoming? But we'll see what happens, right? And you know, it's really funny. A lot of my friends said, well, what are you going to talk about on your radio program now that you have a Democrat in the presidency? Get real. Angel. So guide me.
Hey, truth seekers, gather round the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. We're going to open up the phone lines for you now. The number is 877-99-MALLOY. So jump in here and join us. You know what we've been talking about. So if you have some comments, let's hear them. 877-996-2556. And we pay for the call. 877-996-2556. See, on the one hand, the criticism of what the Obama administration is doing here at home with this crazed invasion of privacy. And then on the other hand, the Obama administration has asked the European Union's international policy chief to, that's Javier Solana, to invite Iran to new talks with the permanent members of the UN Security Council and Germany. That's according to State Department spokesman Robert Wood. Wood said, quote, if Iran accepts, we hope this will be an occasion to seriously engage Iran in how to break the logjam of recent years and work in a cooperative manner to resolve the outstanding international concerns about its nuclear program, end quote. Now, as you know, Iran so far has refused demands to halt its production of enriched uranium, which Iran says will be used to fuel nuclear power plants. And, of course, the U.S. and Israel have accused Tehran of concealing efforts to develop a nuclear bomb. What I would like to see in that statement, I really would. I would, you know, all this invitation now to Iran to sit down and talk about their nuclear program. Why, if we're going to do that, why not have the United States invite Israel to sit down at the same meeting to talk about its nuclear program that has been extant now for, what, 30 years, maybe 40? Wouldn't that be a truly wondrous event where it concerns the Middle East? Tehran? How about your nuclear program? Come on, let's get our cards on the table. Israel, come on. What about your stockpiling of nuclear weapons? Come on, let's get our cards on the table. Let's see if for once, just one time, if we can get the parties in the Middle East, including the Iranians, everybody to sit down and say, okay, come on, let's talk. Let's really talk. I can remember, was it in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s, when Israel was testing its nuclear bombs off the coast of South Africa with the cooperation of the South African government. And everybody who was involved in media at the time knew about it. Most of these reports were kept out of mainstream media. So, especially out of the American press. Americans are not supposed to know anything about Israel except that which is fed to us, period. And again, Israel is a nation state. It is subject to the same sort of criticism that Iran is subject to. Yes, it is. If somebody can explain to me a moral disequivalency between Israel and Iran, send me an email. I'd like to see what it is. But it won't make any sense, I can tell you that right now. But wouldn't that be interesting? While the United States is making a dramatic break from previous policy and inviting Iran to put their cards on the table, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said at the State Department, quote, there's nothing more important than trying to convince Iran to cease its efforts to obtain a nuclear weapon, end quote. Of course, Iran keeps saying, we are not doing that. We're not doing that. And Israel keeps saying, we're not going to answer you whether or not we have nuclear weapons. I mean, it's madness. It's madness. But every single American administration since the development and production of nuclear weapons in Israel has tried to pretend that such a thing it doesn't exist. And it's maddening. It's maddening for someone like me. I don't have a dog in that fight, do I? Except my goddamn survival if all of a sudden a nuclear exchange does break out in that part of the world. But wouldn't it be great if all the parties involved in this madness would sit down and say, yeah, I've got nuclear weapons. Yeah, me too. And if the Iranians, if this is true, the Iranians would say, yeah, well, because you, United States, who overthrew our government in 1953 and installed that goddamn Shah on us, because you did that, yeah, we're developing nuclear weapons. And Israel, because you are expansionist where it concerns the Middle East, because you are a threat to us to the same degree that we're a threat to you, and you have nuclear weapons, yeah, we're going to develop. Sure, absolutely. That's the name of the game. That's the name of the game once the nuclear genie was released from the bottle. I can remember. Well, I guess I can't remember. I can remember reading about or being told the panic inside the Soviet Union after we bombed with nuclear weapons Japan. And how pleased the Soviets were to get their hands on the secrets. Now, we executed Julius and Ethel Rosenberg for that. As it turns out, maybe Julius was guilty. Ethel apparently was not. But this is back in the bad old days where we put people in, was it the gas chamber or was it the electric chair in New York State? I don't even remember. But I don't remember the story. And I should. But this great initiative, and I certainly applaud it. I certainly applaud it. Let's get the cards on the table in that volatile part of the world. We need Iran as an ally. Not against any global hegemony by any other power. We need Iran as an ally in much the same way that we need just almost every country on earth as an ally right now, if we're going to survive what has just begun, and that is the economic collapse of everything. So, yeah, let's all sit down and talk. Let's sit down and talk. The president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, said Washington, quote, has no right to suggest how other nations should live, end quote. He also said, quote, those who have nuclear bombs are backward nations because the time for threats is over. Okay, that looks good on paper, but if, can you imagine Ahmadinejad and this crazy Likudnik Netanyahu sitting down with Hillary Clinton, the three of them? Oh, my God, the mind reels. But we all know that that's what is absolutely necessary, don't we? Do the Iranians support Hamas? Yeah, sure they do. Do the Israelis continue their oppression of the Palestinians? Yes, of course they do. Should there be peace in the Middle East? Yeah, I honestly believe it's time for cousin to stop blowing up cousin. But that's just my opinion. And in the big scheme of things, there amounts to a fart in the wind. It means nothing. My opinion means nothing. Your opinion means nothing. But it always intrigues me when I see stories like this, that engagement with Iran makes sense, where it concerns their threat, perceived threat, of developing nuclear weapons. Well, the Iranians are fully aware that, A, the United States overthrew their government back in 1953, and, B, that there is serious talk in the Netanyahu coalition government of launching an attack against Iran, as the Israelis did against Iraq back in the 80s. Was it the 80s? Yeah, I think it was the 80s. To take out whatever nuclear program, to destroy whatever, I hate that term, take out, to destroy whatever nuclear program that Iran may have developing. Is it a program to develop nuclear weapons? Well, the truth is that any nuclear program produces a byproduct, plutonium, that in fact is used as triggers for nuclear bombs. But if the Israelis are serious, why don't the Israelis come out and say, okay, look, world, yeah, we've got 300 of these things. We have enough to blow up the whole goddamn planet. Now, do you want to talk? Let's sit down and talk. No. No, it's more fun to be cute about it, I guess, and say, we're going to engage the Iranians. As far as the Israelis are concerned, we're going to continue to play hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil, evil being nuclear weapons. And, of course, that doesn't even address the fact that we have, what, 9,000 of these things? 9,000? And the Russians have about the same, 9 or 10,000? And we're going to talk to the Iranians? And people wonder why Ahmadinejad, regardless of what you think of him, why he, you know, looks at all this and says, you know, you people are nuts. We'll be right back with your phone call. Stay with us.
Friends episode of DVD. I went to see the doctor of psychiatry. Weapons of mass destruction finally broke me. He said, act your age, don't be afraid, take two of these. Now listen real hard, put down the guitar. Don't be a retard, be all that you can be.
Watches these fans so you don't have to. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. And yeah, I got a couple of emails here reminding me, and I didn't want to get into a discussion about the execution of the Rosenbergs, but reminding me that Ethel Rosenberg, who I think anyone will agree, anyone who's familiar with any part of the case, and also some of the documents that were revealed by the old KGB that Ethel Rosenberg was innocent. She was murdered. She was not executed by the state of New York. She was murdered when strapped into the electric chair. Remember, the Rosenbergs had two small children when this occurred. When she was strapped into the chair, the electricity did not kill her. It set her head on fire. And they had to send the current through her more than once, twice, maybe three times. And it was, but what made it easy for them was the same thing that made it easy to lynch Leo Frank here in the Atlanta area back in the 1920s. Leo Frank was a Jew. He was an outsider. He was a Yankee. He was an industrialist, so to speak. He ran a pencil factory, for Christ's sake. But the Rosenbergs, the same thing. They were Jews. This was at the height of the Cold War, the Red Scares, where people like Glenn Beck, the equivalent of Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage and the rest of these sons of bitches, were filling the airwaves even back then, or the newspaper columns, with scare stuff about how, you know, the communist Jews were destroying America. So, you know, why did, you know, this, I think it's one of the reasons why the Israelis spy on us all the time. Some of the worst spy cases in the history of this country were conducted by Israelis against us. The Jonathan Pollard case comes to mind. Why do you suppose it? Why do you suppose the Iranians don't trust the United States? Why does nobody trust us? Why do you suppose it is? Because we have this long history of betraying every single country on earth. All of them. We don't care. We don't care. Why are the Israelis suspicious of us? Go back to the build-up to World War II, when American industrialists were saying, no, wait a second, wait a second, wait a second. You know, screw the Jews. Let's form an alignment with Hitler. Was there a bigger anti-Semite in America than Henry Ford? No, there wasn't. Okay, maybe, what's his name? Oh, Jesus, another brain fart. Who's the guy, Kathy, that flew? Lindbergh, Charles Lindbergh. Another massive anti-Semite. So, you know, it comes down. Maybe the Israelis have a reason for hiding their 200, 300, 400 nukes from the United States. Because they don't trust us. The Iranians, they don't trust us, or the Israelis. The Israelis, they don't trust the Iranians either. You know, Jesus, God. And the chit, C-H-I-T, the chit flying back and forth in this crazy game are nuclear bombs. Nuclear bombs. Everybody seems to have forgotten that, you know, that factor, the total annihilation of everything on Earth except the cockroaches. If somebody does feel froggy and starts to jump with all the nuclear bombs. But what a hell of a thing, right? You know, just God, I sound like, what's his name? Can't we all just get along? You know, remember Rodney King? Well, just supposing if the Israelis and the Ruskies and the Iranians and the Americans just sat down and said, look, Jesus, God, we are facing why not the Chinese? Well, so if the Iranians and the Americans and the Russians and the Israelis sat down and said, look, we've got some serious, serious problems coming up here. We really do. We've got to work together. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Think about that. Yeah. Think about that. Yeah. Never mind. Don't think about that. We're going to have to go to a break here pretty quick. But let me just say hello to Robert in North Hollywood listening to KTLK. Hey, Robert.
Mike, God bless you and Kathy so much. Last night I was so crestfallen when I heard on Keith Olbermann Countdown about this sovereign immunity crap. I am so disillusioned. I was hoping for the best in this guy, Obama. I'm from Chicago as well.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that I can think of, the only redeeming thing that I can think of why he isn't prosecuting Bush and Cheney, and forget about even opening 911 because that's such fallacy, it's unbelievable, is the possible threat that Cheney might have on him. If you remember when those Air Force planes were flying with nuclear bombs and they weren't supposed to have them.
Right.
My only theory that could redeem Obama with this sovereignty immunity crap is that Cheney has said, hey, you know those four missing nukes? Well, I have them. They're under the major cities in the United States. You want to play Russian roulette with me? You want to try to put me in jail? You want to bring up 9/11? You want to do anything like this? And what would you do? What would I do?
Now wait, Robert, with all due respect, I think that makes for a great movie script. But I think if that were the case, don't you honestly believe that Barack Obama would call in major media figures and say, okay, listen, everybody, we have a serious problem here. We have a madman loose in the country with three nuclear bombs. The madman happens to be Dick Cheney. I hear what you're saying.
It's not that far-fetched, though. It really
is. Well, with you're right. With Dick Cheney, it isn't. Dick Cheney is insane. And it wouldn't be unlike Dick Cheney to try something like that. But I don't know, Robert. Like I say, that would make... And I don't mean to be a smartass here. That would make a great movie script. But I don't know how based in reality that could be. Although, you may be right. Robert, I got a boogie. Thank you. I appreciate you checking in, pal. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour on the Molloy program. We're coming to your phone calls here in just a second. Got a quick email here from Bridget regarding what Robert was talking about the hidden nuclear bombs. Subject line says tinfoil hat time. Bridget writes, I don't think Robert is that far off, but I don't think it's about the nuclear bombs. I think Obama made a deal with the spawn of hell. Quote, we won't kill you, your wife, or your kids if you, yada, yada, yada. Let's face it, the concept of the Bush or Cheney crime family was not just a funny metaphor you invented. It was, and probably still is, real. I suspect they could take Obama out anytime they want, and the only reason they don't is because he's leaving them alone. And he's leaving them alone because he figures he can still get a lot of things done that he believes in, even while ignoring their crimes, as a way of keeping himself and his family alive. Is that worthy of a tinfoil hat? You never know anymore, do you? You never know. You just don't. Jesus. And this very quickly from Ron in PA, lost in PA. Ron writes, my quote, watching Jonathan Turley on Overman from the 7th yesterday regarding the sovereign immunity defense that gave the Bush crime family a pass for spying on us. Turley explains that with the Obama Justice Department invocation of Section 223 of the Patriot Act, what this does is, quote, leave citizens with a right without protection, and it's impossible to have a constitutional right that can't be enforced, end quote, from Jonathan Turley. So what does that mean, Ron writes? The Fourth Amendment is null and void? The last box you talk about might not seem to be enough to stop the dissolution of Bill of Rights that seems to be continuing with Mr. New Hope. Oh, God. On the blogs, there's a lot of people feeling like they've got egg on their faces. I'm sure he's talking about the liberal blogs. I didn't think I could feel this duped again. What is it? When is it enough, Mike? When do we tell them to stop? Good question. God knows I don't have any answers. Hack is calling from Texas, driving through Texas, listening on XM. Hey, Hack.
Man, I am dumb.
Hey.
I am absolutely dumb over this wiretap issue. I mean, W was a pathetic little weasel who probably had virility problems, but I just don't see where Barack has that excuse.
Well, he doesn't seem to have an excuse, does he, Hack? So how does this leave you where it concerns your feelings about the Obama presidency?
The serious setback. I mean, he's certainly doing a hell of a lot better job than his predecessor, but definitely have to diverge. Definitely have to diverge here. I mean, I'm absolutely dumbfounded. I guess his vote on FISA when he was running for president should have been an indication.
Well, it was to a lot of people, and I think you caught it. I know I caught it, but at the time, it just didn't seem to register in the great scheme of things. Hey, listen, Hack, we're getting an awful lot of. Oh, can't do it, Hack. Too much noise coming through your phone. It's just blowing out what you're saying. Thanks, Hack, though. I appreciate you checking in, pal. I guess the best time to call us is if you ever stop driving. You know, if you're ever on a break, give us a call, because the noise from your truck was a little bit too much. Who's this? Nolia? Is that right?
Hi, yeah, this is Nolia from Madison.
Hi, Nolia.
Yeah, I want to say that I'm a big Obama supporter, and I supported him all through that stuff with FISA during the election. And I'm sure there's got to be an intelligent reason for the actions that he's taken now. But I just noticed that liberals such as yourself seem to be all throughout the campaign and even now very cynical and negative, and I noticed you didn't mention that he's actually trying to at least get rid of our American nuclear weapons and telling the world that you know, we're going to stop being hypocrites on that front. And it's just kind of depressing to hear you talk, compare him to George W. Bush.
Well, no, Leah, let me interrupt if I may. I'm not comparing him to George W. Bush. I'm looking at what he's doing. If what he's doing is the same as and beyond what George W. Bush did, what would you have me do? Just shut up, right?
No,
I'll put you on hold. I swear to God, I'll put you on hold. My question to you, Nolia, is what would you have me do? I'm not setting the policy.
Right.
Now hold on, Nolia, hold on. Barack Obama is doing this. Would you have me be quiet about it?
No, what I would have you do is that I noticed a lot of your criticisms have merit to them or truth in the criticism. But criticism and cynicism alone is not enough to get the change or the act of democracy.
Okay, what would you... I'm going to put you on hold again because, as a matter of fact, you know, you've got to have a dialogue with me. It is not going to be Nolia talking over me. You'll say something, I'll say something. Now let's try it one more time. One more time. What would you have me do?
What I would have you do is with a positive purpose and a vision, do something, whatever you see fit, whatever's in your heart. But I don't see you serving the community through your heart.
Okay, Nolia, I'm sorry. I'm gonna just cancel the call because you're not making any sense whatsoever. You don't see me serving the community through my heart. Okay, that's fine. You're right. I'm not. I'm doing a talk radio program. But I will guarantee you, Nolia, and anybody else, that when I bust my ass on this program to help get elected a Democratic president, and then he turns around and does a couple things that are more fascistic than the fascist he succeeded, I will talk about it. If that offends you, don't listen. And if you have something to say, I welcome your comments. Don't misunderstand. But there is not a lot I can do about it anymore. Why don't you do something, Nolia? Why don't you go organize a community? You live in Madison, Wisconsin. You live in a liberal city. I live in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, if we want to use that as a comparison. Why don't you do something? Or are you one of these people that just sits back on your butt and complains about it? And God forbid that some liberal talk show host should point out that President Obama is committing acts against the Constitution that are exactly the same as those acts committed by George W. Bush. Now, if you want to keep your head in the sand or ignore what the man is doing, go right ahead. But that's not going to happen on this program. Come on. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, bidia, won't get fooled again, and all that nonsense. That's the way it is. Man. The caller, Nolia, represents, I think, what is so wrong. People want everybody to be quiet. Don't say anything. Don't criticize. And Nolia, you know, I know what that is. That's a black thing, and I know it's a black thing. Don't criticize, because the white folks are looking to jump on us anyway. But I'm sorry, I'm not in that generation anymore. I will criticize. I don't care if somebody's black, white, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight. When they behave like a fool, I will point out that they're a fool. I hope that makes sense.
I'm falling off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get. You're listening to Mike Malloy. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
It is 21 past the hour. Kathy in Green Bay, Wisconsin writes, yes, Obama's not the liberal we would have liked to have had, but he ain't John McCain either, and that's why I don't feel duped. With eyes wide open, I voted for Obama, with McCain in mind, and with the hope of instant runoff voting. You know, that's I think that's clearly the reason I voted for him also. Going way back to the beginning of the primary season, you know, I made it very clear, I think I was still working on Air America, that my candidate was Dennis Kucinich, period, end of story. And then, of course, immediately I get from a lot of people, well, Kucinich used to be anti-abortion. He switched because he's running for president. Oh, my God, I get sick of that issue. As far as Ralph Nader is concerned, oh, my God. Yeah, he would have made a great president in 1968. I mean, come on. His ideas are wonderful. Too bad the Democratic Party doesn't incorporate his ideas. I mean, there's no way he can run and be president. You know that as well as I do. But as far as Barack Obama is concerned, knowing as we did, and anybody who's been has listened to this program, especially over the primary season, I mean, how can you come to a conclusion that I wasn't as critical as I could be of his voting record, the same way I was with Hillary Clinton? I don't know how many emails I got from people who just ripped me a new body orifice because I had the absolute temerity to point out Hillary Clinton's voting record. I mean, these emails were like I was calling Hillary Clinton a bitch because she was a female who had the desire to be president of the United States. And I can't, you know, until I finally gave up, I can't deal with that kind of madness, just like I can't deal with it with the last caller. You know, to sit here and shut up because somebody is continuing the process of destroying the Fourth Amendment. That's not going to happen. I don't care if he's a Democrat or a Republican. It matters not a damn. Barack Obama is continuing a couple of policies set up by George W. Bush. Oh, everybody was willing to just jump up and scream, myself included, about the fascist activities of George W. Bush. So what are we supposed to do now that we have a Democratic president who is continuing that particular policy? Shut up about it? Are you goddamn serious? Somebody needs to tell the woman who called this, and if you live in Madison, Wisconsin, hopefully somebody who knows you will get you aside and say, listen, you know what? The Fourth Amendment protection thereof is not a Democratic or a liberal or a Republican idea. It has to do with protecting the Constitution. Barack Obama took an oath. Didn't he? Wasn't there something in the oath about the Constitution of the United States? Wasn't there? Is there not a Fourth Amendment to the Constitution? Does not the Patriot Act destroy the Fourth Amendment? Which side is Barack Obama coming down on? Now, if that's something, you know, if we're supposed to give him a pass because he wants to talk to the Iranians, if we're supposed to give him a pass because he no longer is using the term enemy combatant, if we're supposed to give him a pass because he says he's going to close Guantanamo within a year, if that's your game, play it. It ain't mine. I hope Barack Obama succeeds. I hope he's doing rope-a-dope. I hope he's just exhausting these goddamn right-wingers to the point where they all collapse and roll over like these little bugs roll up in a ball and die. I hope that's his game plan. I really do. But when the Obama Justice Department files notice with the court that they are not, by God, not going to essentially under the Fourth Amendment, then is that not time to sit up and take notice, or is it time to just shut up and be a good little ignoramus? No, I'm not going to say nothing about Obama because you know why? He's a Democrat. Oh, please. Please. That's your attitude. You better change it because down that road is tyranny. We all talked about this. We talked about this when it was Bush. Just because we have a Democrat now, are Democrats incapable of the same kind of actions that a Republican is capable of? If there is some pressure on Barack Obama to behave himself, if there's some attitude, look, we let you become president, now do what we say, or there might be ramifications. If we're going to play that game, then maybe it's time to just say we've already lost. You know what I'm saying?
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
Before the hour. A couple of emails on that last call. Ron writes in, Mike, what's up with the argument to never say anything negative? What kind of brainwashed jellyfish backbone claptrap is that? What would Nolia have you do? Pretend that someone taking away our Bill of Rights isn't a cause to smile? That deluded positive evangelical whoopla about making nice has a lot in common with whistling in the dark. Yeah, and Bob in California said, I owe the caller an apology. You have to be kidding me. William from Hollywood, Mike, there's no place for ignorance or being blind or to go along to get along. Just the fact that Obama voted for FISA, and then when it came up during the campaign, he said he would look into it, if I recall correctly. And then people who voted for him said they would hold his feet to the fire. We all know how that goes. You need lots of people to perform feet frying. There are a few things he has done and continues to do that really trouble me. The email you had earlier with seven issues was perfect and direct. We're not out of the woods yet. I don't know what certain callers expect you to do other than point out the facts. I guess they expect you to build a force of your own. How nuts is that? And Angela writes in, Mike, you are cool, and that chick does not represent how black folks that listen to you think. So, so blank her, and please don't say it's a black thing. I am black, and I love you. Keep up the good work. Hey, I'm glad you didn't avoid her call, but told her to get off her lazy ass and do something. Please keep pointing out the F-ups that Obama makes. And yes, I love Barack, still on the honeymoon, from your faithful fan who listens in L.A. and online. Love you for keeping it real and funny and informative about the Bush crime family. Angela. What I meant about a black thing, I think it's true. At least I've been told it's true. All over the entirety of my life, that it was always very difficult. It's a cultural thing brought about by lynching and slavery, that black folks don't criticize other blacks in the presence of white people. It's dangerous. Black criticizing a black in the presence of a white, and the white just might feel then justified back in the bad old days to do violence against the person being criticized. So the idea of you know, we had it in our family, too. It's called omerta. You don't talk about your own people. Of course, nobody was going to lynch Italians. Not to the extent, not anywhere near, not even in the same county as what happened to black folk in this country. I'm not talking about the bad old days. I'm talking about the past 50 or 60 years. It was just a thing. You don't criticize, a black person does not criticize another black people in the presence of white folk. You can criticize all you want, but you don't do it, in front of white people, because white people don't know, because white people are not to be trusted. That's all. I mean, it's simple. Come on, let's not all pretend like because we have a black president now, everything's okay and Rodney King was right, we're all getting along. That is not the case. You know it as well as I do. Go to some of these right-wing websites and read some of the puke and filth that is being put out there, not because of the man's policies, but because of his race. So, you know, now granted, you got to consider the source. But that's what I meant, Angela, about, you know, it's a black thing. Maybe it isn't anymore. Maybe it isn't anymore, but it damn sure was up until the moment Barack Obama was elected. And that was, you know, black folk do not criticize. And that's the sense I got from the caller. That's all. That's the sense I got from the caller. But that's why, I mean, if it were George W. Bush doing that, I don't think that caller would have hesitated to call him a fascist son of a bitch or the equivalent thereof. You understand what I'm saying? But because he's a Democrat, don't say anything, Mike. No, thank you. Can't do it. John is calling from Pineville. Is it Pineville, West Virginia? Listening on Sirius.
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at right now. It's where I work.
Okay. Hey, John.
One of your emailers, San Francisco high school teacher,
yeah,
about history, said about picking
right
up these right-wing radio hosts.
Right.
Well, I agree with that, but the problem with that is that these guys, they're like preachers, and their followers are so beat down due to stress in their life, you know, possibility of losing their job, everything just falling apart around them.
Right.
That when we go in and pick these people up, even if it is Bush's doctrine, that they swear to God that the communists were marching down Pennsylvania Avenue and were taking over.
Uh-huh.
And the problem is that would just incite these people who are already beat down and brainwashed
right
to become more violent.
So what's the suggestion?
Well, as much as I agree with picking them up, it's a little late in the game to do anything with it. You know, I really don't know what to do. You know, it's kind of like a rock in a hard spot.
Mm-hmm.
If you pick them up or you start telling these people, hey, you know, they're misleading you, they're lying to you, they're using you, you know, they're predators, basically, is how I feel about it.
Right.
They're just trying to incite you to do things that you really shouldn't do.
Right.
They're not going to believe you. And if you pick them up, it's just going to increase the paranoia that's running rampant amongst their listeners,
yeah,
their followers. And the problem would be, too, I think, if you picked up Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity.
Now, when you say pick up, what do you mean?
All right. According to the Bush Doctrine, which it's been a while since I've looked at the Patriot Act.
Oh, you mean if you arrested them or
yeah.
Okay.
All yeah,
right.
When I say picked up, I mean
okay
arrest them.
Okay.
These people would become so paranoid that when the next group came into, you know, into power on radio,
right,
they would just say, see, these people were telling you, these people.
Yeah. I get your point, John. I understand. And I'm sure it's the same thing that was said, you know, in Germany in the 30s, or in the United States in the 30s. We had a real Nazi bastard on the radio here back in the 30s. He was a Catholic priest named Father Coughlin. I wasn't around, but I've been told and I've listened to some of the old audio or some of the old recordings of what this guy said. And he was an absolute ally of Adolf Hitler. The people couldn't shut him up. He was on one of the radio networks. I think it was NBC had two networks, the red and the blue. And the blue was where I think they put the alternative programming. He was on there for a while. When NBC finally got rid of him because of protests, he started buying his own time to be on radio stations. And finally, whoever's the boss of priests, finally, you know, his boss had to rein him in. So, you know, I don't know what we're supposed to do about these people who are absolutely destroying the country with what they're saying on the radio. I have no idea, but
yeah, I mean, right now I think it's a no-win situation. You let them run roughshod, they're going to do damage. You shut them up, they're going to do more damage.
Right.
And I mean, I agree with I think it was Thomas Jefferson who said dissent is the highest form of patriotism.
Right. Absolutely. All right.
I agree that people should dissent, but at what point does dissenting cause more damage than it helps?
Right. And I don't think, and John, thank you. I don't think suggesting that Barack Obama's administration is going to come after everybody's guns. I don't think any of that would qualify or could be defined as dissent. That is insanity. That is inciting to murder. And I think it's been made very clear that these right-wing talk show hosts are doing exactly that. This is the same kind of garbage that inspired Timothy McVeigh to go murder 168 people in Oklahoma City. It's the same thing. And these right-wing talkers on radio and television, whether they're media people or these Christian freaks or these extreme right wingers or all these phony organizations, they realize that they are being marginalized. Nobody gives a goddamn about right wingers anymore. They have destroyed the country. Nobody cares about the Republican Party. Everybody realizes that Republicans and conservatives have absolutely nothing to offer the country. Nothing. So how is their message changed? I mean, the Republicans in Congress, led by that John Boehner, when they present a budget, they present an alternative budget, doesn't even have any numbers in it. I mean, this is how crazed and sick and empty they are. So what's the alternative? Cause trouble. Make it appear that they're being persecuted. Oh, my God, they're going to force everybody to marry a homosexual. Oh, my God, they're going to force all the women to have abortions. Oh, my God, they're going to do this. Oh, my God, they're going to do that. I'm frankly kind of sick of it. You know what I'm saying? We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 10 before the hour. Are we having some trouble with the phones? I guess we still are. Still trying to tweak things, but it is a process. I guess just like the Obama presidency, right? So if you've had trouble with hearing some of the phone calls tonight, we do apologize. But thanks to Kathy Bay, Ben Burt, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, and Bruce Enberg for their input into the program tonight. Back to your phone calls. Dane is calling, listening on Sirius, driving in Kentucky. Hey, Dane.
Hey, how you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I actually listened to your show quite a bit, but one of my liberal left-wing buddies, Bruce, he's probably listening now because he knows I'm on hold with you. he turned me on to listening to you because I'm one of them right-wing whack jobs.
You are?
Yeah.
I'm
a Republican, though.
Well, why in the world would you listen to this program?
Oh, because I actually agree with a lot of things you have to say.
Well, then maybe you're not a right-wing whack job after all.
Oh, believe me, I know the difference in the values system of each one, you know, and yeah, I'm more of a conservative. I do agree with quite a bit of the things that you have to say because I'm not like the old-time conservatives.
I know, but the real reason you called?
I just want to say it's nice to hear somebody actually criticizing when somebody actually does do something wrong. Because, oh, everybody's got this idea that you can't criticize this Obama. When, you know,
well, right there,
whether you're against him or for him, you know, he's carrying on the same thing that Bush did that I didn't agree with and that everybody on the left was carrying on about Bush doing this. And now he's doing it, too. And I'm like, wait a minute, I thought he was going to end all this.
Well, this is the clear indication that you don't listen to this program, and maybe you should, because, you know, I've said a million times, I was criticizing Obama's policies, his voting record, back during the primary season. So,
yeah, no, I never listened to you back then. It was just recently that I started.
Okay, well,
I've caught you quite a bit.
If you if you tune in more often, I think you'll find that there's probably a lot of things that you would agree with. I frankly at this point agree with the idea that there's not a whole lot of difference between Democrats and Republicans once they get elected.
I 100% agree on that too.
And I also believe that anyone who thought I'm going to play the race card here. Anyone that thought that Barack Obama was a liberal because he was a black man is out of their minds. That's a person who does not understand the black community. The black community is probably more conservative when you get right down to it than any group of real conservatives than any group of white people in this country. But black folk happen to vote the way people should vote. They vote their best interests. But that still does not mean that the black community is liberal. It isn't. Barack Obama is not a liberal. You call him what you want, but this is the thing that really irritates me about these right wingers on radio insisting that Barack Obama is a liberal or worse, that he's a socialist. Good God in heaven, this guy is trying to save capitalism. You want a socialist? Listen to me.
Yeah, because I was going to say, out of what I've read, I would understand to be more like a Marxist, but...
Who? Obama?
Yeah, that's the only thing I
could
call him to. But then that, again, that's... I didn't call him that exactly either.
But now, wait a second. See, Dane, that's your right-wing talking point. Give me, very quickly, because we ran out of time, one example of Marxism that you find in Barack Obama's approach to governance. Just one.
That's the only thing I could closely even compare him to, I mean. You know,
but I'm saying, give me an example. What, based on what do you compare him to Marxism?
The social policies that he...
No. You got to be specific. Come on, Dane. Give me something.
I don't have a specific one.
Okay.
No, I can't win that debate. No.
Okay, it's not a debate. What you are doing is spouting right-wing talking point to me. Barack Obama is, oh, my God, I wish he were a Marxist. At this point, are you kidding? About the only thing that's going to save this country from just sinking into this financial swamp is more of this unbridled capitalism that Barack Obama is pushing. He's not a Marxist. He's not even a socialist.
Well, I don't know what you'd call him then, because that seems to push more for the corporate side, but not...
Okay, well, do Marxists push for the corporate side, Dane?
Well, back in Adolf Hitler's day, yeah, they kind of did, but they pushed...
No, wait. Are you telling me that Hitler was a Marxist?
Well, in the book that I read about him, it said, yeah, it was written by some German guy who said he was.
Oh, my God! Hitler was a fascist! Marxist, don't you understand that Marxists, communists, were some of the first entries into the death camps? They preceded the Jews? Oh, Dane. Listen.
One of his heroes was Karl.
All right. Listen. Let me put you on hold. Dane, I hope you continue to listen to this program. We're gonna have to spend months getting you straightened out here. Just absolute months getting you straightened out. A. Adolf Hitler was not a Marxist. B. Neither is Barack Obama. Oh, C. That's the only way that you can definitely compare the two. But you know, to go along with these right-wing talking points. Come on, Dane. You sound like a reasonably intelligent guy. Don't let somebody get inside your head with that and ruin a perfectly good brain or a perfectly able or consistent way of using logic. Come on. This is what right-wingers do. This is what the right-wing media does. They take your consciousness and turn it into chicken noodle soup. They take your brain and liquefy it. Don't. Dane, just listen. Just continue to be a listener. Oh, and subscribe, too, because, you know, maybe... Thanks for hanging out tonight. Oh, God, do I need a drink tonight? I'll see you tomorrow night. Okay, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.